From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back. I'm Chris.
And I'm Eric.
And Eric is back. It is the triumphant return of Eric.
Yes.
And guess who's not here?
Pete, yes.
I'm beginning to suspect you two are the same person. I've never heard you both on the same podcast.
Not likely, but Pete will join us shortly, I'm sure.
Yes. Are you well? Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go. After a brief winter hiatus, I'm ready to get back into podcasting.
Was it only the winter?
Yeah, it was pretty much only the winter.
Well, I guess that was like three episodes for us, so that could be anywhere from 3 to 6 months.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's the pace we're going. So, you know, because we put out shows when we want to.
If you don't mind me plugging, there's a link on the website, but one of the things I've been up to, other than what we may be talking about today, was my writing page, which you can find at ericholtgrief.com. The link is on the awesome RuleZero.com page.
But it's RuleZeroPodcast.com,
Rule Zero
of course.
Podcast, yes.
If you go to, well, I only correct you because if you go to RuleZero.com, you'll get some Japanese vitamin supplement.
Okay. Well, we'll take them over eventually, so.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that website to die, and I'm going to try to leap on it. But yeah, we have on the blog roll on the right-hand side of our Rule Zero Podcast webpage, you are the first link on the blog roll.
Number one with a bullet, all right.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, and there's the other thing we're going to talk about there. Anyway,
yes.
Spoilers. So, I have a few things to talk about in the news. If you have anything to talk about, we can get started with the news.
Let's do the news.
Well, let's go straight into the news then.
All right.
It is time for the news.
I may have to bump up the volume on that. So, people listening don't know, but that's the first time I've been able to play that during the actual show. I've been adding them in later in post-production. But this is now I have a soundboard here through Pamela for Skype, and I'm playing sounds live.
It sounds awesome. The music is awesome. You changed everything, you know, and it's just awesome.
Well, I kind of missed the Neener Neener song, but, you know, Pete suggested we get, you know, something else, but... You know,
I think it works. It works. It's
and you know, for old time's sake, because I missed the Neener Neener song, I'm going to give you a Neener Neener. Okay, there's your Neener Neener.
Yes.
We fulfilled our quota of Neener Neeners.
How I miss you, okay. Neener Neener. Anyway,
big news.
All right,
this is the big news. I've got two big news that are related. Okay, Mass Effect 3 is out.
Of course.
And that's pretty big news. But the bigger news is I finished Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, awesome.
So I know, about time. It only took, what, three years?
Yeah, something like that.
4 years?
Yeah. I mean, they almost have Dragon Age 3 out, so, you know.
Yeah, so guess what the first thing I did when I finished Dragon Age Origins was?
You decided to go and get a picture of Claudia Black naked.
That is incorrect. Actually, what I did, in fact, do, the instant I finished Dragon Age Origins, I started it again.
Of course.
I played the good guy through... Actually, I played kind of a jerk the first time, but I decided to play evil the second time. So I'm playing a mage with the goal of basically doing anything I can that hurts Templars and the Chantry and the Circle Tower. And that's pretty much my goal.
I hate to break it to you, though, Dragon Age 2 is just not as good.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I hadn't really planned on getting it, but I've got Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2 sitting in a pile here for me to go through, and right under that is Skyrim, so I think I got my queue full.
It sounds inspired.
Yeah, so that should take me till probably 2016.
I'm thinking, maybe 2020.
Yeah, so any news?
Not right now. I mean, the one thing I would like to tell the listeners is Crusader Kings 2 came out not too long ago. It's a Paradox Interactive game. You play a medieval dynasty going through 300 years of history. I've been completely addicted to it, so it's very good.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a computer sim?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Is it a sim or a strategy?
It is a strategy game, but there are high elements of simulation in it.
Is this free for download? Is it Steam? Is it,
you can find it on Steam. If you're in Europe, Gamers Gate. Let's see, Paradox Interactive, Crusader Kings 2. It's not free, but, you know, it's worth the money.
That's good.
Yeah. Return on investment, it's probably the cheapest game I've ever bought.
Okay. Well, I had another couple news items, but some of them can wait. The biggest news item, the hotter item, is that the Marvel superhero game, role-playing game, is available as a download on a PDF download.
Oh, wow.
From margaretweiss.com.
Very cool.
It's free. The PDF download is free if you pre-order the game, which I don't know if it's been shipped yet because I pre-ordered my game and it hasn't arrived.
Huh.
So I can only assume that it hasn't been shipped.
Huh.
That will change the minute I see it on my doorstep. But I got a PDF of the book, and it's got the breakout plot line, which is roughly the first six issues of the New Avengers comic series, which came out a couple years ago. Their goal for making the supplements is to capture one of the overarching plot lines of Marvel Comics.
Awesome.
So this book has 23 heroes, stats for 23 heroes, and it has a blank heroes page.
Does it have
Iron Man? Does it have what?
Iron Man?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, it has 41 named villains plus a few thugs and, you know, generic named villains.
Oops.
And this is it's using a variation on the Cortex system, which is what the Serenity role-playing game is based on.
Oh, okay.
And it uses every die except the D20. So if you had a guy who wanted to play, take all of your dice for Mutants and Masterminds, and you wanted to take all of his dice to play Marvel or any Cortex game, you guys would get along famously because Cortex uses every die but the 20, and Mutants and Masterminds only uses the D20 now.
Yeah. Great. Awesome.
So it's a Jack Spratt thing. So
what are you running, Chris?
What am I running? I'm still running. I'm running a Serenity game now.
Not so much what, but when are you running? When are you running a Marvel game?
Oh, when am I running Marvel? As soon as I have absorbed the entire book and understand how to run the system.
That should take you about a day, but...
But there's a couple previews online if you want to read the rules and, you know, how dice pools work, and, you know, there's a bunch of ways you get different dice to add to your action. You add them all together, you roll them, you know, certain low dice get this effect and high dice get this effect, and, you know, we discussed it in an earlier show, but it was kind of a very cursory glance.
Well, I'm sure myself and the listeners will be happy to take a look at it on RuleZeroPodcast.com.
Yeah, maybe if I can record an actual play of running a Marvel game, that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
Yeah. Speaking of superhero games, you can pre-order Heroes and Villains for the DC Adventures game, which does run on the Mutants and Masterminds engine.
Oh, very good.
You can order that from greenronin.com as of March 7th, which is a couple weeks ago. And that covers Lady Shiva through Victor Zsasz. The volume one cover, it was alphabetical. I thought before it came out it would be heroes in one, villains in another. But that is not the case. It is alphabetical. It is A through L in the first volume and L through Z in the second volume. So
very interesting.
Yep. So that's all my news.
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, without further ado, I will ambush you into an interview in the heart of the matter. Right. So let us go into the heart
of the
matter. This is the heart of the matter. Okay, I didn't tell you this ahead of time, but I wanted to ask you a few questions about your campaign that you are going to build based on a variation of the Dragon Age role-playing game.
Right, which is basically...
So tell me about it.
Well, theoretically, or at least the way that Green Ronin likes to talk about it, the age system is the basic, you strip out all of the setting aspects of Dragon Age, and you get basically the age system.
Okay.
But it's the Dragon Age rules. So one of the things I did with the Tear, which is, or the Terraphalon, depending on, you know, what culture you come from, which you can find as a link on our blog roll, through Obsidian Portal, which is an awesome hosting site. Basically, I put up a way to generate your character. And one of the things I wanted to do, because I think the Dragon Age system is good, and I'm actually looking through the third set that they have. They have their open testing, beta testing.
Yes, they had an open testing for which covers set 3, levels 11 to 20.
Which set 3 will be the last set that they do, which is a good thing because the set box set stuff was kind of getting annoying.
They were taking too long between box sets that, you know, I don't think I could wait another year.
Yeah.
You know, to get the rest of a game.
So they basically said, okay, 3 and 4 will roll together and we'll just give it as 3.
That's a good decision. I love the company, but I really hate their release schedule.
They're a little slow, yeah. So it's very difficult to actually run games, you know, on any type of time scale. I think the part of the problem I have with the age system is that they've taken some really good ideas that, like the way that they do conviction and heroes and heroes and villains, or what is it, mutants and masterminds.
Right.
Which they had the conviction system or the hero point system. I liked that. But they don't have that in Dragon Age. And I liked a lot of the True 20 stuff that they did with the, you know, just a lot of the ways that they decided to set up the classes and some of that stuff. So they're basically all Green Ronin ideas. And basically what I'm trying to do with the Tear, with this campaign, is trying to take the stuff that's really awesome about the age system, and then mix it with the Mutants and Mastermind system, as well as True 20, which was their flagship product, Green Ronin's flagship product, to come up with something that has a more of a pizzazz. Because a lot of the Dragon Age stuff is, it's missing. I don't know. I mean, you've played the game, so...
Yeah, I felt that a lot of the system was tied too much to the setting. Like, it was impossible to make up... It was impossible to use the Dragon Age system to make up a character that wasn't a Dragon Age character.
Right. And, I mean, they've doubled down, or I guess tripled down on that now with the third set. So it's
right.
not...
And they didn't have all of the combinations and options available that I would have liked to have seen.
Well, and not only that, but it gets harder to play. I mean, they've fixed it a little bit in the third set because they're adding things in like Spirit Warrior. But if you wanted to play a classic paladin... in the Dragon Age system, you couldn't do it. You don't have the track or the ability to do that. So you can't just say, well, I'm going to skip out on the warrior class I'm at this level, and I'm going to pick up a class of mage so that I can supplement that and make more of a paladin type character.
Right. There was no way to multiclass.
There was no way to multiclass. And so I've kind of tried to add in some of those rules into the age system in order to be able to simulate that, and also to have more free-form characters. One of the things that we've talked about in previous podcasts, I'm sure, and we've talked about just in daily basis, Chris, is that I really hate that the D&D, and in some respects other systems, they track you. Oh, you're a paladin, and you're going to get more paladin skills, but you're not going to actually get to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And think...
Well, then any class-based system is going to do that, too.
True, but I mean, at least, you know, earlier D&D and definitely the Dragon Age system, you're very strongly typed, and you can't get out of that class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to fix that because that doesn't really make any sense, especially because you'd have people that would be mixing and matching, and so my players like to mix and match as well, so it's just really hard to do that with Dragon Age. So kind of going through one of the things I did, you might hear some clicking in the background, but that's just me going through the wiki I have up there.
Your Obsidian Portal page.
Yeah, the Obsidian Portal page. One of the things I really liked about Obsidian Portal was the fact that they have this, like, basically wiki attached to everything. And it has, and I'm also kind of pitching to Obsidian Portal, so they can write the check to Eric Holdgrief. That's fine, you know. Or you know, premium account, we can talk, you know.
I'll pimp any product I believe in.
Yeah. So basically, there's a link in there to character generation. One of the things we've talked about this. We've played several different role-playing games, and I've played several different role-playing games. And so I wanted to come up with something that's more RP-centric and definitely not something that – I mean, Dragon Age is a setting in a box, and I'm trying to actually create that from scratch. So what I wanted to do is build the age system so that it would work well with me.
So you took basically the Dragon Age role-playing game and reskinned certain aspects of it so that you're using the basic core ideas of the system.
Right, the combat.
But you're stripping out anything that has anything to do with the setting.
Yeah, the combat, the way they do magic, all of that. I mean, I liked how they did that stuff. I just didn't like all of the setting-heavy elements that they've thrown in there. So I ripped all of those off and basically ripped it down to the skin almost. And then
I hear a lot of people. I listen to a lot of other podcasts, and I hear a lot of people talking about reskinning monsters for this purpose or reskinning a story for this purpose. Well, this is the same idea. You're reskinning. You're just reskinning an entire game system.
Yeah, yeah. And so you know, going through the thing, I wanted to make sure that there was a concept involved, and then determining the abilities. Which at the time, I think I was looking through when I actually built this skin or built, you know, started working on the skin, they had the second set of rules out for, it was in beta, I believe, for Green Ronin, had the second set of rules out for the age system. And they did actually have a way to determine abilities without dice, because people really were upset that you had to roll dice, which the dice rolls didn't make any sense. And so they had a way to do it. And I think I ended up coming up with what I have up on the web, but
it was as I recall, a nonlinear system. Like you rolled a certain number of dice and then consulted a table to find out what your result was.
Right.
Wasn't that
Which,
it?
Which, yeah, that I think in some respects, not to knock the fine folks at Green Ronin, but that can be that's like the laziest way of game design, you know.
Well, any you know, a lot of random character generation systems are kind of on the way out, really.
Yeah.
A lot of people prefer point-based so that everybody starts on the same level.
Well, and it also makes a lot more sense because you have more of a fine-tuning to it. I mean, I can remember playing, D&D 2.0, basically, or AD&D, or whatever you want to call it. And it was like, okay, roll your stats. Okay, you made your six rolls. And then you're like, you know, I don't like the stats, so I'm just going to re-roll. Just keep re-rolling and keep re-rolling until you're like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't actually see that until roughly the time that the Pool of Radiance computer game came out, and you know everything was randomly generated, but you could just re-roll everything with a click.
Yeah,
and you could just like keep clicking and clicking and clicking until you got a character who was all 16s and 18s.
Yeah, well, you didn't play with my players. So.
Well, shortly after that game came out, I recall seeing people showing up at a game and saying, "Okay, these are my pages and pages of stat sets."
Mm-hmm. Right.
That I'm going to pick the best one from for my new character in this game.
Which is really silly, because if you want to play the Paladin, for instance, taking D&D in specific, you should just be able to buy the points to play the Paladin.
Sure.
Anyway, so after I got the abilities through a point-buy system, I basically have, because I've started with I've taken the Dragon Age elements out, I had.
Let me stop you. You said you started with the ability scores.
Yes.
Or did you take the point by system from set two?
I actually built my own, but it mirrored heavily the point by system. So
okay.
I mean, it wasn't.
So that was the first thing you attacked.
It was really
was
close, you know.
Your first stop on reskinning was stat generation.
Right. Because I went through the way that they create characters in Dragon Age, and so I had to rebuild that. Once you picked your abilities, I should say, that's what they call them. Then you pick your race. Well, that gives you a package. It's a package deal, and it gives you all of the stuff you can use in Dragon Age. So I had to rebuild that because, you know, first of all, I wanted to add a few different races that aren't in Dragon Age into my campaign. And second of all, I had to give them stats that made more sense for the Tear rather than for Ferelden. And so I basically, their step three was choose a race, and I gave my choices, and basically you picked up the package that I created. And mind you, I looked at the Dragon Age system and saw kind of the pattern that they were using. And so I tried not to, and Chris can vouch for me on this one. We've had discussions on this. I tried not to overpower the basic characters.
Well, when anything you're doing, when you're adding something to a game system, you have to decide whether it's, you know, so weak that nobody will take it or so powerful that everybody will take it.
Right. Well, and the other thing is that you don't, because the way that the game system is built, then there's probably monsters in a game master's book, and you don't want to overpower your level one character so that the goblin or rat or whatever the basic mook low level mm-hmm. guy is they're just pushovers.
Right. Well, at the same time, there are some creatures that exist to be pushovers.
True. So. But I mean, there's pushovers and there's like, you know, give me 400 of these things because I really want a challenge.
Right.
So step three was choosing a race. I actually added a couple of races in there that don't exist in the Dragon Age system, mainly the Merfolk, which are mermaid type people. Half-orcs. Mm-hmm. I think halflings aren't in there as well, so that would be three right there. So then after that, I had to apply the racial benefits that go with the fact that they've chosen these races. And once again, in Dragon Age, that's just the fact. You say, well, I'm going to be an elf, and so then you get all of these elf things.
Right. Well, you'd say, I'm going to be a Dalish elf, and they say, here's your package, and you can be one of these classes.
Right. And because of that, I had to build that in there so that people could figure out, okay, well, I want to do this, and then I want to do that, and this is where I want to be in the end. So then after that, because I'm trying to make this more of a multi-class rather than a single track, you know, you're going to pick a fighter, and that's going to be you for the rest of the game, you had to choose a base class. And so because I liked the C alliteration of that, I broke it down into combat, casting, and clandestine-based classes. Combat basically being your fighter, casting being your mage, and then clandestine being your rogue, ranger, thief, spy.
Okay. Like a skill base.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So this is very, very similar to the True 20 system of the warrior, the adept, and the other guy, the expert.
Yes, the expert, yes. So, yeah. So, I mean, that made sense. That split seemed to work out well. So I kept it, you know?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much the archetypes that exist. I guess you could, if you really wanted to split hairs, you could just say caster or combat.
Well,
but there's room for the skill base.
But if you remember, when you look at the Dragon Age system, they have thief, mage, fighter, which breaks those skills down basically in a
And the rogue type is very different from the fighter type in the Dragon Age system.
Yeah, and so, I mean, those skills existed, so I needed to put them somewhere, and so clandestine made the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
So then after that, because of the fact that the Dragon Age system says you're going to be a Dalish elf, and a Dalish elf can be a thief or a rogue or a fighter, you at that point in time, you have like a binary choice. So because of that, I had to add in this upbringing, because upbringing is very important in my campaign setting, where there are very strict, hierarchical, feudal kind of positions. And in the Dragon Age system, you basically, if you pick the Dalish elf, you pretty much were going to go be slotted to do this kind of character, whereas if you picked a Ferelden noble, you got another type of character.
Right.
And so I wanted to basically break that out of the character because a Ferelden noble was basically a fighter or a rogue, and the choices they had,
and all mages were Circle Tower mages,
right?
Or they were apostates.
Yeah. So I wanted to break that out because it didn't thematically it didn't make any sense that you'd be tracked so tightly to, you know, being a noble would mean that you'd have to be doing this type of thing. I mean, it didn't make any sense. So I gave them a way to go look at the extra focus and talents, because they also, the Dragon Age system had coupled those focuses and talents to their thematic roles, basically.
Right. Yeah, a lot of your character creation was chosen for you.
Right. I mean, yeah, you can create a character in Dragon Age quickly. The problem is that you create a very simple character as well. So anyway, after that I said, well, I wanted to add some extra bonuses to the characters. Or this is the point in time where you've picked up these bonuses because you've decided to be an elf that's combat-based and from the burger class or the merchant class. And so then basically at that point in time, I wanted to say to my players, okay, apply your bonuses now, because there's some bonuses for being an elf, some bonuses that doing the combat-based thing, and then some bonuses for the social upbringing.
Okay. Then
after that, I said roll your starting gold, which is something that they did in Dragon Age. Buy your equipment. I mean, actually, that's not true. I rebuilt the equipment scale in... primarily at the behest of my wife, who is also an avid historian, and we went through the equipment list in the Dragon Age thing, and some things were ridiculously expensive. Like, I think rope was like a gold piece, and yet you could get candles for like 10 cents or 10 cents, mm-hmm. Which
yeah. Well, most game equipment lists have a really strange idea of economy.
Right, and so we kind of went through that and made it a little bit more, at least from our amateur understanding of medieval history, we started to go, well, a candle would have been really expensive, and mm-hmm. rope probably not so much, considering you could, if we're talking just hemp rope, you should be able to find that pretty much anywhere. So we rebuilt the equipment list. We also tried to start with the concept of a basic package for the adventurers, that something that if you're going to be an adventurer, you would have just spent the time to acquire. Again, this being a medieval type world where, you're not going to be like, I'm going to go wander in the forest but I don't have some rations, or I don't have a water skin. I mean, people in history, especially, they were going to go out, go foraging, go do whatever they were going to do. They brought their supplies with them. I mean, it was a matter of course.
Okay. So as a history buff, do you have a particular period in Earth human history that this campaign is supposed to reflect or mirror?
Probably the later Middle Ages, the High Middle Ages, anywhere between the 13th to 15th century. This would the Terror would be in many ways a parallel of that. It has a lot more of the concepts of basically the social standing, the feudal system. Although that changes, especially in our own history, it was a very rapid point in time in which social standing became something that was far more flexible than it used to be. So that kind of thing's happening in the Terror. In the entire campaign I'm planning on running is basically a sort of taken from the history books aspect of the Ottoman conquest of Hungary. So there's a lot of different cultures, clash of cultures kind of thing, and there should be some excitement and maybe a little bit of running for your lives because the hordes are upon you kind of thing.
Okay. Well, would you say that any particular aspect of this period in history informed any rules decisions that you made in changing the Dragon Age system?
Primarily the social standing, the doing the upbringing thing. That was definitely looking at history and the social standing and the doing some numbers crunching on who was in the nobility, who was a burgher, who was a freeman, what a villein was, a serf, and tinkers, basically. So that stuff is definitely taken from history, looking at and the various social strata. I think the money, if you look at the money on that, the burghers end up making out with a serious amount of cash compared to the nobility or the freemen. Which makes a lot of sense. The burghers had the money, but they didn't have the political power, so to speak, with the nobility. Whereas the nobility weren't necessarily, they were in a class that had limited money at times, but far more rights and political power. So
okay.
That definitely applies. Anyway, so getting back to my little list, once sure. you bought the equipment, you calculate your defense and speed, which are absolutely Dragon Age, you know, ripped from the rules kind of stuff.
Okay.
Which is...
Was it, now, your equipment, did you use the... I saw that you had the sort of various and sundry items that weren't on the Dragon Age list. But did you take the stats for weapons directly from the Dragon Age system?
I believe I have. I don't know if it's necessarily stated on the website.
Okay. I just wonder because, you know, that seems like an aspect of reskinning a system that you don't really need to spend too much time doing.
Well, no. I mean, and for the Dragon Age combat system and the way that they did, they worked the armor and whatnot, it made sense. I mean, there were some points in time where when having run a Dragon Age campaign, I looked at it and I thought, some of the things, like we ended up modding out a rule with the crossbow, where the crossbow was like, I think, what was it, 2d6 or something like that?
I remember bows and crossbows being kind of understated in the rules.
Right. Well, and the thing was that all of the players at the table found kind of odd was that a crossbow, which historically was a weapon that had been banned by the Pope because it was so devastating, ended up doing less damage than a greatsword. And so we kind of thought, well, no, they should at least be equal. So I think we fixed that, and that would be one of the things I would definitely take into this campaign, because bows were seriously nerfed compared to swords.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't think it might be a game balance thing to have to get close to somebody to do greatsword kind of damage that might, you know, be important to maintaining balance? Or do you think that maintaining the verisimilitude
I think
of the devastatingness of a crossbow is more important.
I think that the designers, I think the Green Ronin designers, when they came up with the Dragon Age system, as you know, playing the game, it's very oriented towards the, you know, guy or gal who wants to end up being the, you know, heavily armored Grey Warden and go take the greatsword and swing up close at all of the darkspawn.
I played a sword and shield guy, and I kind of accidentally made somebody who was somewhat indestructible.
Yeah, yeah, and they really believe. I mean, I think they really kind of try to capture that with the rules. The problem is that having somebody who loved playing an archer in there, he was filling enemies up like pincushions, and they weren't dropping.
Yeah, well, there was that one session where I was deliberately going around and finishing off his pin cushions just to be a jerk.
And that was really funny, because you're talking about the fact that the guys with sword and shield were able to go in and start. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was basically riffing on the system by doing that.
Yeah, and so we needed to balance that out better, especially because they had an elven archer archetype, which was just really... It just didn't make any sense that you would get screwed for being the guy that really wanted to play this thematic type character.
Sure.
I think it was, what, Dale or Shelf, something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so once you've calculated your defense and speed, I wanted to throw in something that I saw in, what was it, Spirit of the Century.
Okay.
Which is the player, or no, that comes up, but the player character secret, and I wanted basically my players to have some sort of way of getting them to adventure that is, mm-hmm. you all meet in a tavern and there's a guy in the corner who has some gold and he offers you some gold to go out and rescue.
Yeah, I got a story about meeting in a tavern, but that's a story for another day.
So I wanted something that I could kind of put, you know, goad my players with and give them hero points or conviction points for the fact that they would be able to keep their secrets.
Yeah, I used that technique in a campaign that started in 3.5, and I didn't know it came from Spirit of the Century. It came to me in a dream, you know, basically. It came to me in a flash. I just said, hey, I know what would make these characters feel more real to their players. If they had something that they didn't want the other players to find out that was on their mind while they were adventuring, and that motivated them to play.
And full disclosure, I like that, so I'm stealing that. Which, if you're reskinning a game... Don't be afraid to steal stuff from someone else that works, you know?
Right, right.
Anyway, so after that I said creature background, and, you know, I want people to put more in than the typical raised on a farm, decided to leave, you know, mm-hmm. found myself in a tavern looking at everybody else, you know? And,
right.
And that's because for the reason that, you know, I want them to be attached to their players, the players to be attached to the characters, and so I don't want you to kind of fluff that. And I also gave some advice on backgrounds in there. I think I found it from another site and just kind of added some stuff. Then finally, I wanted to do the adventure slug, and this is the actual Spirit of the Century thing.
Okay, tell me about an adventure slug.
And provide. Let me click on it real quick here to make sure that I'm actually looking at the right thing. It's been a while since that. Yeah, so it's a one-sentence description of a previous adventure you had, and it should include the fact that a companion or friend was with you on the adventure.
Okay.
So I have an example on here. I said, when I was a young halfling, my friend and I went exploring a cave near our house. In it, we discovered a lost dwarven mine. And it's Bob who's playing Turk the Half-Hearted.
Okay.
And so this, it's a type of description, and it's great because what we're going to do is we put all of these slugs into a hat.
Okay.
And then some, you know, the player will put their name on it, and then you will just shuffle it around and pass the hat around, and everybody will pull out a slug. And if you get your own slug, you have to put it back in and pull out another one. And then what happens is once you open up the slug, you're the companion in that adventure.
Well, that's handy. That's kind of like a setting up relationships like in Fiasco.
Exactly, exactly. Fiasco does this as well. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to be able to say, you know, because it's always cheesy that they're all like, well, you all meet in a bar because that's,
right.
You know, just...
Well, there's also the, we get in a fight, and at the end of the fight, somebody has to say, we work fairly well together. Let us join start an adventuring team and go and kill things and take their stuff.
Right. And so, you know, just statistically, if we've got, if half of my players know each other and the other half know each other, then it's easier to get the two groups together, especially at the start of a campaign, than if I just say, oh, well, you all meet in a bar. Because that just seems at times so contrite, you know?
Sure. So everybody in the party that you start the game with is either a friend or a friend of a friend of another party member.
Exactly. And so then that just basically helps me get things rolling. And finally, the other thing I said...
It cuts through a lot of the dead wood that you don't want.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and I've played games with other DMs and GMs who, you know, you start in the bar and, you know, you come to find out that you're playing with someone who's a... you know, evil tiefling female, and you're just like, dude, why is Bob playing an evil female tiefling?
And, right, and why would I want to adventure with that
why
person
would I want
after having just met them in a bar?
Yeah. So then finally, I wanted my players to read the wiki pages because I don't have the Dragon Age system to fall back on. They should have to read the wiki pages to know what the heck's going on, get the general idea of where... what countries are there, and I pretty much...
I can give you some advice on that. Don't spend too much effort drawing up the history of your world in a wiki. I can tell you that most of your players won't read it.
Well...
or they won't read as much of it as you want them to read.
And understanding that is fine, but I also... the wiki pages are there, and if they want to bring, you know, a phone or a small computing device... so that they can refer to them, I'm fine with that too. In fact, most of the stuff I put on there, it would be common knowledge to their characters, and it's available for them to understand, so that you don't get that whole, you know, oh, well, they're from, you know, Al-Anon in my campaign, and then have my players go, who is Al-Anon again? Is that a person, or is that a country? Or,
right.
You know, check.
Well, I actually, for the campaign that I mentioned earlier that started as a 3.5 game that became a Pathfinder campaign, I had started the whole idea of the campaign world in a wiki, and I had a skeleton of, you know, these campaign ideas put in the wiki, and I'm pretty sure 80% of the people have looked at the wiki at least once, and I'm reasonably sure that only two of my players have looked at the wiki more than twice.
Well, and like I said, then again, if no one looks at it, it's a crime. But the odds are that someone's gonna. I mean, especially if you have various different terms and whatnot, they'll start looking at it because they'll.
Well, I had tried to make it as much as, you know, this. Here's the starting place. Here's home. Here's the name of the world. Here's the name of the continent.
Right.
And, you know, links to information about those things, just like, you know, I had this idea before there was an obsidian portal. So I didn't know that other people were doing this in a better way.
Well, and Obsidian Portal allows you to have that. And the other nice thing about Obsidian Portal is they have a GM-only section. So you can throw your own comments in there, and you don't have to worry about your players getting hold of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can actually protect information on my page. It's arulia.wikispaces.com if you want to check it out.
Oh, there you go.
That's the campaign world that I created. And I'm reasonably certain that only two of my players were really engaged, and I actually had one player who was really into writing up new pages about it. And he and his wife collaborated on a couple things, and she did some things, but he really went nuts in like making actual parts of my campaign world become more real. And I was tremendously indebted to him, and not a single other player in the game looked at his pages either.
Well, and these things happen. I mean,
So my point is, don't make that too much of the focus of your time.
Well, and at least in my case, there's enough up there that people can get by for a handful of adventures.
Right. People are going to want to see the rules. And so, you know, mixing that in with information about the campaign world that is important is probably the best way to get them on the wiki.
Well, and at least in this case, I've actually marked the rule pages as, you know, out-of-game knowledge so that I don't have that messy bleed over of like, well, you know, I know the sword does +2 damage. It's like, no, the sword, you don't think that way. I mean, that's a thing I have a big pet peeve with players. It's like, you know, if it's the sword of dragon's tears, your character knows it as the sword of dragon's tears.
Right. I agree with that to a point, because I think it really takes you out of the narrative to say something that a player would not, or that a character would not have any concept of. Like, what does +2 mean to an adventurer?
Exactly.
You know, but at the same time, you have to know what to tell the GM you just did for damage.
True. But then again, that's a player-based thing rather than, I mean, and saying, as a character, saying, well, I wield my +2 sword. No, you don't. You wield the Sword of Dragon's Tears, and it has...
Well, I just actually listened to another podcast today. It was Critical Hits, so if you listen to the very good Critical Hits podcast, the one I listened to today talked about, in fact, mentioned people not reading your campaign material as well, but also talked about when somebody says, I have this sword, you know, you as a GM, you can say, what's the name of the sword?
Right.
So that actually gives the character, gives the player a little bit more investment in the character, in the world, in the narrative.
So yeah, so basically that's how to create a character in my campaign. I think there's some other things I have in there that may or may not be on the webpage, because Chris and I sat down at one point in time and we kind of redid some of the way that they did magic. And
right, I don't even know which rules you actually settled on.
They should be up there. I'll take a look. I mean, it's been a while. I know I have them somewhere. Somewhere there's.
But we took the basic idea of the Dragon Age magic system, and we made some tweaks. And I know that you ran pretty much all your changes by me first, and I'm not sure exactly which ones you stuck with. So.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd have to see, but I wasn't really very. Oh, and the other thing I added too that may or may not show up in there is getting rid of the kind of the mana rule versus, we just basically stuck with something called stamina.
Uh-huh.
And
so it's the same pool for all character types.
Yeah, same pool for all character types. Stamina.
Well, that makes sense, because if you've added multiclassing, you kind of need to do that, because otherwise somebody would have two complete pools to draw from, which would make them more durable than any other character in the game.
Yeah, I'll pull it up real quick and pull up one of the pages here.
Sure.
Essence is what I it was. And so essence was used instead of mana. And if you wanted to cast a spell, you used essence. If you wanted to do a stunt as a, instead of using the stunt point rule that they had, I just decided to scrap that and allow you to use essence instead. Because it didn't make any sense. A fighter would have mana as well, or could have a magic stat, and they never used it. It was like, oh, well, this is a dump stat. I'm gonna
put your worst roll in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've actually made it worthwhile to actually put points into. I can't remember what it's called in here, and maybe I'll find it. But basically, it builds on your essence, and essence is important for being able to do stunts, being able to do all sorts of other interesting things. And that will help with the campaign, because the other thing I found very annoying about Dragon Age is they have this great combat system, but then for their criticals, they have this really dopey, stunt point thing.
Yeah, the stunt point system could have been better. I would have liked more choices, because sometimes the only choice available to you didn't make sense with the weapon that you were using.
Oh, yeah. And in the subsequent systems, they've actually expanded the choices of stunt points you can do. But it just was kind of dopey in the sense that, a lot of the things in the game, in the computer role-playing game, were fairly, if you had the stamina and you had the clock was, set, you could punch the button and you could do the stunt. Whereas in the role-playing game, with the fact that the stunts were so random and at times they made no sense. I mean, like lightning attack versus dual attack.
The system, for anybody who hasn't played, is if you roll doubles on three dice, you have one die that is differentiated that is called the dragon die. If you roll doubles on any of the dice for whatever you're rolling, if you're succeeding on your action, you get to use the number that's on the dragon die as a point pool to pay for stunts. And some of the stunts let you hit again, some of them let you push the enemy back. Most of them seemed to be geared toward melee combat, though, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, they had magic stunts, too. But the magic stunts were not as interesting.
Right.
And so
it was pay less for the spell stuff like that?
Yeah. I think there was one that you could add an extra D6 to the damage.
So you changed that rule such that they can pay for stunts out of their stamina
point. Right, and the roll on doubles still holds true. It's just it doesn't the roll on doubles doesn't cost them. I mean, if you roll double sixes, for instance, you still get 6 points to play with. But it's just an extra six plus your and some of the ways that stunts are used in my system basically allows that, so that you can. If you wanted to roll like a chaining attack, so say like you're the guy with the greatsword, you want to chain an attack together so that you can do like a spin and then a knockback, I'm allowing you to do that, provided you have the points. I mean, it might cost you 12 essence points to do that, but if you're rolling a double six, well, there's half of that already taken out of that, so it only costs you six to do that chaining attack.
Okay.
And as they advanced, that was part of the system I built in, was that you could start chaining these attacks and get it.
That's actually what I was going to ask, if this gets better as you go.
One of the things I found that the way that they advance in the Dragon Age system, they seem to add more of other things, and they did have
you add more skills, you add more hit points. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of bland, and they had a journeyman, apprentice, journeyman, master kind of thing for some of the skills, but they didn't offer all that much when they did that.
Right.
And so that was kind of...
And there were a few things about the Dragon Age system that bugged me, like the time that I had, as the sword and shield fighter, was trying to defend the mage against things, and I was in front of him, he was backed into a corner, and I couldn't stop anything from running around me.
Yeah,
that was... Hopefully, in your system, you'll have something to accommodate that.
Well, we had talked about adding a taunt kind of thing, and that was, and in fact, in the set three, I was amused to find that they do have some sort of taunt rule, because obviously people have been like, wait a second, I have the best armor, I have the damage per second, and I can't get anybody to fight me.
Right, nobody wants to come near me. And, it's not so much a taunt that I would have needed at that time, so much as any kind of concept like an attack of opportunity or an ability to guard a square.
Right.
Or a hex, I think we were using.
Right, and that was just kind of odd, and so...
Yeah, it was a quirk of the system that cost us our mage.
Yeah, and I mean, I fully admit that I was running as the GM there, and I totally was gunning for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you were right. I mean, monsters would go for the guy who's throwing spells around. Right. It just made sense to me that I should be able to do something about that. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't anything in the system.
Yeah, I was really taking a page from the computer game where my mage was always the first one to go down. I mean, you know.
Oh, the AI's stupid.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, it was stupid but accurate in the sense that, you know, if you're fighting a bunch of adventurers and there's a guy who can throw fireballs, you want to get rid of him first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, so an intelligent bad guy could really do some damage in the Dragon Age system, which I never quite figured out why they didn't try to, you know, do something to fix that kind of. And so the other thing I've actually done is, I think in, I don't know if they're listed in here, it might be hidden in the GM section, but I did actually add in some various different creatures. Getting into a little bit too much of the lore, but to try and put it very simply, there's a race I've added in here that are called Kvatch Takers, and they're basically a creature that was created by wizards because after wizards started casting spells, there was a bit of a demon issue that they had called Kvatches, okay, which are basically small demon rat kind of things that steal magic. And so,
that's interesting.
Well, so to create this character, I basically went into the D20 open rules system that Wizards of the Coast had, and uh-huh, found I guess the imp or one of their characters and converted it over to the Dragon Age system, which ended up being a lot easier than I expected, because there's a lot of things that D&D puts in there, like movement speed and all this other stuff, you just don't really need.
Okay.
And being able to do that and convert those monsters over was pretty easy, because then I got all the monsters I needed. I mean, and there are some monsters that are in the Dragon Age system, but they're few and far in between and not really at times what you're looking for. And in fact, right, I think that the set 3 really kind of falls down based off of the beta I'm looking at, because they basically say, oh, we'll just start adding a few. If you want to make them tougher, just add a couple more stunts to the creature.
Uh-huh.
Which, yeah, okay, you can do that, but, you know, there's what
that doesn't do a
lot.
Yeah,
I mean, in the Origins game alone, there's like, what do you'd say, 100 different types of creatures.
I don't know if there's that many, but yeah, there's definitely several dozen.
Right, and I think that in all three sets of that Green Ronin is putting out right now, they may have 30 different types of creatures.
Yeah, it's pretty sparse.
So yeah, you're really hurting for, you know, something exotic to throw at the party.
Well, there's quite a few sources. If you're able to, you reskinned, I guess you reboned the imp.
Yeah.
You left the skin intact and reboned
it. Right.
So if you were able to do that without much effort, then you've got, you know, several game systems worth of monsters to draw from for your game.
Exactly. And that's what I was kind of looking for. I basically, the way I did it is I kept his hit points and then sort of worked around with the type of damage he could do. And added a few, you know, nasty surprises for my adventurers, and then, you know, boom, you're done.
Excellent.
Well, the other thing I didn't mention, but the other thing that's built into the system I've worked on is I added a bunch of hit points to the characters. Like, I've often found that the level 1 characters are paper thin when it comes to gaming systems. I mean, and they're.
I found the Dragon Age first level characters to be pretty hardy.
Right, and I think I followed that with adding in something like 20 extra experience or 20 extra health points to start, okay, because I just found them to be, you know, I found your normal level 1 D&D characters, they can, you know, if they stub themselves with this, you know, if they stub their toe, they're dead, you know.
Yeah.
They're not as fragile as the old BattleTech. BattleTech PCs, but they're really close.
Yeah.
So, okay. You know, it's a different take on the age system. I really highly encourage our listeners to come and take a look at it, and maybe if they've got any ideas or if they like the lore, or, you know, they're in the area and they want to play, you know, just shoot me an email, shoot me a message on Obsidian Portal.
How would they do that?
You're going to ask me a complicated question here. They have if you sign up for a free account, they have a new messages area, and you can then shoot a private message in through the system.
Okay. So this whole new system, based on Dragon Age, so far untested.
Untested, yeah. Well, that might change soon, but, you know.
Yeah. So we're going to have to play test this very soon.
Most definitely.
But it looks pretty sound to me. I can't wait to give it a shot.
We'll see. If anybody can break it, it'll be Chris.
Yeah, that's what I do. So, recap, reskinning a game system.
So, recap. Oh. Okay, so...
So you took a look at a game system you wanted to base your campaign
on. Right. So I looked at the rules. I figured out what rules will work. I figured out what rules have to go. And basically I tried to pry the setting rich things out of the game system.
Mm-hmm. So you left stats mostly intact but changed the generation system.
Exactly.
Changed the races and opened up the classes.
Yes.
And simplified the classes... so that anybody could be anything, right?
Right. And I stream.
Are there things that certain races can't be?
I think that the worst person, or the worst group that gets nerfed, are the half-orcs, because they have a bit of an issue with the fact that they can't. They're stuck as tinkers, which are basically kind of a gypsy type of social status. And
okay.
Half-orcs, because of the setting rules, not because of any specific. Ethos in their class construction, but the setting rules, half-orcs are generally pushed off into the hinterland because of the fact that they're not really accepted in human society.
Okay, so there is a little bit of setting in your rule system
here. Right, I mean, it's not completely generic, and it would be very hard for someone to say, turn it into a Forgotten Realms campaign, based on the fact that I've added some setting into my mm-hmm. chain. Now,
okay, so after you opened up the classes, you added the social status, which is not part of Dragon Age at all.
Yeah, well, it is part of Dragon Age, but it's put together with a bunch of other things, and so...
That's true. Your background is race and class together.
Right.
So you've decoupled the race and the class.
Right, because, you know...
The race and the social
standing. The race and the social standing, yeah. It didn't make any sense for the players to... At least in my setting, didn't make any sense to have them all bound together, so...
Okay, so you had to do a little bit of decoupling there, a little bit of splitting founding principles from their character system to create your own. That's
right.
Good. Okay. And then you pretty much apply racial bonus and then do equipment just like in the other game and calculations like that, and you're pretty much good to go.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mean,
and a couple campaign-specific things?
You have some thematic things, and then, of course, the adventure slot. But those things are... more player-centric rather than system-centric.
Have you run any of this by the Green Ronin discussion boards regarding Dragon Age?
Because sadly they changed their boards, and all of the stuff that they had on there has gone by the wayside, or my account got deleted, which I was a little irritated with them, actually a lot irritated with them when that happened. But they have, I mean, there are people that are doing similar things on the Green Ronin site. I mean, they're very experimental on their forums. And I didn't see them doing, I mean, they really were trying to stick with the setting that was Dragon Age. So, because I was not, a lot of the tweaks they had weren't a good fit. Although I think there's a couple of people that are trying to do more D&D like settings like Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance with this system. But then again, they weren't really interested in multiclassing either.
Okay. So other people were doing things with the system, just not making a more genericized game from
it. Right. And so that it has its ups and downs.
Okay.
Like any type of reskinning.
Excellent. Okay, then I think that is pretty much the bulk of what we can talk about with the reskinning of the Dragon Age system. And I think we can't really say any more about it without playing through it.
Exactly. So we'll have to get back with our lovely audience on that one.
Yeah. So until the next episode, we should sign out and let them know how they can get a hold of us.
Oh, yeah. RuleZeroPodcast.com. Don't make the mistake I did at the beginning of the show.
Right. As heard on the instance.
Oh, yeah.
I did a little paid promo for that on that show. So.
Hey, yeah.
So they mentioned us, and then Scott, the host of the instance, kind of messed up our name. So they actually talked about us for about 90 seconds.
Oh, wow. 90 seconds.
So that was like free advertising. So thanks, Scott. Thanks, Instance.
Sweet. What?
Thanks, Terpster.
Rule Zero Podcast is linked on my website as well. So.
Okay. And you can contact me at chris@rulezeropodcast.com.
All right.
And you can like us on Facebook. Okay. As Rule Zero Podcast.
Oh, yes. Like us on Facebook. We like to be liked.
We only have 7 likes. You know what? We should do a contest for new likes.
Seriously.
I think next episode we're going to have a contest for all of the people who have liked us on Facebook. How's that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We have to find a prize, and then we have to...
What about one of our wonderful t-shirts?
That's a great idea. We may do a t-shirt for a prize.
Seriously.
But we'll discuss that, and you know, next episode we will have contest details. But you feel free to like us in the meantime. We're not going to limit it to people who like us after we announce the contest. So like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We are Rule Zero Podcast on Twitter.
This is Rule Zero Podcast, signing out.
Game on. That's Eddie's suggestion. We're going to do it.
All right, there you go.
Okay, game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.